We all deserve some yay in our day. So say hello to Hello. Hello makes oral and personal care products that add wonder to your routine, like a toothpaste that makes brushing fun for kids. It's called Unicorn Sparkle Toothpaste. It tastes like rainbows and sunshine, works brilliantly, and it's fun. So it's pretty much magic. And for the adults, Hello Anti-Plaque and Whitening Toothpaste, which is just as good without the unicorns. Visit HelloProducts.com and let Hello add some everyday yay into your life.
This message comes from Greenlight. Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on what your kids are spending with real-time notifications. Join millions of parents and kids building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get started risk-free at greenlight.com/iHeart.
Hey everyone, this is Carrie Champion, the host of Naked Sports.
When you sit behind the wheel of the all-new 2025 Nissan Armada Pro 4X, you'll feel like the entire world is your playground, and you'd be right. Because this unshakable fortress of a vehicle is built to take you on your next adventure. With a twin-turbo V6 engine, the all-new Armada is powerful enough to take you anywhere. With its 8,500 pounds of towing capacity, it will let you bring all your toys along. And with seating for eight, your whole crew can join you. Nissan created a truly capable vehicle in the all-new Armada. In fact, it's the first Armada to earn the Pro 4X badge, which Nissan reserves for its most adventure-ready vehicles. The Armada is a big SUV designed and built for big adventures and must be experienced to be appreciated. Drive the all-new 2025 Nissan Armada today. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. Intelligent four-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code iHeart or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This is continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh from True Crime Today.
Welcome back to our continuing coverage. I'm Tony Bruschi. We're up to segment number four of our coverage. Let's head to the courtroom.
The jury is present, sir.
Very good. Thank you. Madam Forelady, how is the jury?
They're doing okay.
Very good. Thank you. Your next witness.
Your Honor, defense calls John Marvin Murdaugh.
You place your left hand on the Bible and raise your right. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Thank you. You'll have a seat on the stand. Just that microphone.
John Marvin Murdaugh, Murdaugh.
Mr. Murdaugh, will you tell the jury just briefly some background information? Where are you from? What do you do?
Yes, sir. So I was born in Columbia, grew up in Hampton, attended public schools from first grade through high school. Graduated Wade Hampton, went to the University of South Carolina, got a degree in criminal justice, and I'm now self-employed. I've opened some companies in the heavy equipment business.
What's the name of your company?
Well, the main company is Murdaugh Rental Center, but I've got Murdaugh Kubota, Murdaugh Equipment, LLC. So generally speaking, I'm in the construction equipment, agricultural tractors and implements. I'm in the equipment business.
And do you have offices, locations, multiple locations?
I have two, one in Hampton and one in Okotie, Bluffton area.
Are you related to the defendant, Richard Alexander Murdoch?
I am. I'm his brother.
Do you have any other brothers?
I do. Randy Murdoch is my brother.
And do you have a sister?
I do. Lynn.
All right.
Both are here.
And your parents are whom?
Randolph and Libby Murdoch. Okay.
Are you the only son of the three that didn't go to law school?
I am, and I'm quite proud of it.
tell the jury generally about the Murdoch family, your family in this area.
Well, I mean, obviously, we're probably like most families or a lot of families. We're very close. I mean, the siblings, we stay in touch. We do holidays together. We, you know, you try to interact and keep your family core together. I mean, we're just, you know, a normal family doing normal family things.
Right. Do your parents, and we've heard about your father, Randolph Murdoch, who died on June the 10th. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And then your mother is Miss Libby?
She is.
And she's still alive, correct?
She is. In fact, yesterday was her birthday.
And you went by to see her, I understand.
I did. With my kids.
In the spring of 2021, were they both alive? Was your dad alive?
Yes, sir.
And what was his health in the spring of 2021?
Well, for some, he had been battling cancer, and not just cancer. I'll use that term loosely. He had multiple forms of cancer, but he had been battling cancer, had health issues. He had been through heart surgeries. Just overall, his health was not good. You know, just in and out of hospitals, just
right.
Age and the diseases were catching up to him.
And would you check in on your mom and dad any chance you got?
I would. So I didn't tell y'all this, but so I don't live in Hampton. I live, my wife and family and I, we live down in Beaufort or just outside of Beaufort. And so my drive is about an hour's drive to do it. So I didn't visit as often as Randy and Alec because they were in Hampton. But absolutely, anytime I had the opportunity to work in Hampton at my office, I would always take time to stop by. And then sometimes I would just wanted to go see my mom.
Was it routine for one? So either your brothers who lived in Hampton to stop by and check on them routinely?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I don't know every time they went because I wasn't there, but I feel confident that they visited more just because of the proximity. It's just an easier visit.
So let's talk about proximity. Your brother Randy, where does he live?
He lives in Hampton, in town.
And then your sister Lynn, where does she live?
She lives in Somerville.
Okay. And then Alec, where did he live in spring of 2021?
Well, I think in the spring of 21, he was living in Moselle. I think all of them were.
Okay. And is Moselle close to Almeda?
Well, it's further than Randy's house, but much closer than mine.
Right. And is that in your mother's house? I'm saying Almeda, but is Almeda a town?
No, Almeda's correct. That's the location. That's the property name, if you will, the intersection name. I think that's a general.
And just tell the jury where that's located.
It would be east of Varnville, maybe 2 or 3 miles outside of the town limits.
Is it basically at the intersection of, I don't know, what's that mean?
Intersection of 278 and Highway 68 that would go to, one goes to Ridgeland and one goes to Yemassee.
Okay. And would Alec visit your mom and dad frequently in the spring of 2021, your knowledge?
Oh, absolutely.
And we'll get to more of that. How well, I want to talk about Paul. How well did you know Paul?
I knew Paul very well. Excuse me, I'm going to have a hard time talking about Paul because we had a very special relationship. But I knew him very well. And I'll do my best to answer any questions about him.
Well, did he have a nickname?
He did. They called him Little Rooster.
And did they call him anything else?
Well, I mean, he'd been called Little Rooster. He'd been called, as you heard, Paw-Paw. I mean, that's what my family, my kids called him.
What did you call him?
Well, it depends on where we were and what we were doing. When we were doing something fun in a social event, I would refer to him as Paw-Paw. Now, y'all haven't heard this yet, but he worked for me. So when he worked for me, it was Paul, or it was Paul Terry, because I was trying to be, you know, a little more authoritative.
Right. Who else called him Paw-Paw?
Most of all the family. And that's not, you know, that's not a name that was said at all times, but when we're having fun, kids would say it. My wife would say it. It was just a name that was used in fun times and in normal times.
And you mentioned Paul worked for you. When did he work for you?
You know, that's, I thought you were going to ask that, and unfortunately I don't know. He's worked for me maybe prior to June of 21. He was working, or he was working then. And I think he worked the two summers prior to that. And it was just summer work. I mean, it would only last a month or so, a month and a half.
And was he working for you in June of 2021?
He was.
And what was he doing for you?
Anything I asked him to do.
Where was he working?
He was working at my Bluffton Okatee store. He would do anything from power wash equipment or deliver new tractors that were being sold, talk to customers, help customers load and unload rental equipment. As you heard someone testify, that boy would work. And so whatever was asked of him, he would do.
Was he on the phone the whole time, or did he actually work?
Not at work, he was not. Well, not while I was there.
Oh, right. Was he a good worker?
He was an excellent worker.
Did you spend time with Paul? Let me back up. Do you have a place where you hunt? You have a property?
I do.
Do you have a name for that property?
We call it Greenfield.
And would Paul and Buster come out to Greenfield to hunt?
They would. Absolutely.
Let me just back up. What was the relationship between Alec, Paul, and Buster?
Oh, it was a great relationship. You know, anything that the boys were doing, Alec wanted to do, and the boys always came first to him. And some of y'all may have been on dove hunts before, but we would have I have a very small field, and you know, I've got 10 stands in the field, and I have, before the hunt, I have it organized where I know who's sitting where. Well, I have Alec. He says, well, can the boys come? Well, of course they can come. So now I've got to rearrange for that. Or if they said they were coming and the boys backed out, Alec always backed out. I was thinking about this. To this day, I don't believe he has ever come hunting with me since his boys have been old enough to hunt without his boys. It's always with the boys.
Did he do other things with them?
Yeah, did sporting events, you know, football games, baseball games.
Was he close with his sons?
Very close.
Right. And how about Maggie? What did you observe of his relationship with Maggie?
It was a great relationship. I mean, all marriages, I'm sure, have hiccups here and there, but I'm telling you, it was a good marriage. In coming here, I was trying to think of ways to describe it. My wife and I and Alec and Maggie, we went to a concert together. It was the Darius Rucker concert. And of course, we're sitting in there. Alec and Maggie are sitting just below us. And I had just gone, and I hope I can say this in court, I had just gone and bought one of those $15 beers, and I was back in my seat, and song's playing, and my wife taps me, and Alec and Maggie are holding hands and swaying together, and she's like, why aren't you holding my hand? And so my $15 beer got put down. They had a great relationship. I mean, that's just one of many football games. They would put out a tailgate spread. They would welcome the kids, family, friends. It was just a wonderful.
And did they do a lot of family things together with Paul and Buster and Paul and Buster's friends?
Yes, they did. You know, I knew of trips that they would take, family trips. You know, vacations. They had a house at Edisto that y'all heard about, and they would have, you know, they'd always have friends come over, particularly the boys' friends.
There's been some discussion during this trial about Paul leaving guns and stuff around. Did you ever experience that?
I did.
And tell the jury a little bit about your experience.
Well, you know, I've heard the testimony about it, and it's accurate. I mean, I could tell you all 100 stories of him leaving things, but he was notorious. He would come stay with us at our house. He would leave. Liz would have all of his clothes washed, and, you know, he just left and didn't care about where his clothes were. In fact, Paul came duck hunting with me one time at Greenfield. And I smile fondly on this when I, you know, think back on all this. So we had a great duck hunt. I think there were 3 of us in the blind. Great duck hunt. We picked up all the birds, decoys, and we left, and we go back up and have a nice breakfast. You know, doing all the post hunt, all the fun things that you do. Well, I went back hunting. I don't know. It was probably a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks later, and his hunting gear is still in the blind. I mean, I had to smile when I saw it. I was like, that's Paul.
Right. Did, I want to ask you a little bit about riding property. I mean, you ride your property down at Greenfield?
I do.
And have you ridden?
Riding in what?
What? Like checking on the property.
Well, you mean like just riding around joyriding or checking feeders or?
Right.
Yes, sir.
And do you always carry a gun when you're doing that?
I don't.
And have you ridden property like at your dad's place with your dad and maybe Alec or others? I mean, is that
a
frequent occurrence?
I would say almost never when I rode the property with my dad.
Almost never carry a gun.
Almost never would we carry a gun. We would just joy right now. If, you know, if it were late in the afternoon and we were considering maybe getting in a deer stand, you know, at the last minute, possibly, but typically with my dad and us, we didn't carry a gun then.
Right. Speaking of your dad, what was, you recall what was going on with his health the weekend, the Saturday, Sunday, before June the 7th, so I guess would start. Friday would be the 4th, Saturday would be the 5th, Sunday would be the 6th.
Right. So he was actually in the hospital, I believe, in Columbia that weekend. And I think he got out of the hospital on Sunday.
Okay. And did you pick him up? Your brother picked him up? You know who picked him up?
I did not. I may have been out of town. I can't recall. I've, you know, heard the testimony about it. I did not pick him up.
Did you end up taking your father to the doctor on that Monday, June the 7th?
I did.
And where did you take him?
I took him to Savannah.
And
to his, what I would call his normal doctor.
Okay.
I think Columbia was maybe he had to go up there for some different things or another. I'm not sure.
And was he having some breathing issues on?
He was having major breathing issues.
And when you went to the doctor on Monday, June the 7th, was there a decision made to admit him to the hospital?
It was. So when I took him, we were only going to a doctor's appointment. We were not going to the hospital. We It was just me taking him to a doctor's appointment to try to find out what the breathing issues were, maybe, you know, some type of a treatment or medication or something to help him. While we were there, not as soon as the doctor saw him, but when the doctor saw him and went through some things, he immediately told both of us that he had to be in the hospital, that he was not getting the oxygen that he needed.
When was he admitted on that Monday?
He was.
And what was, as you understood, the prognosis when he was put back in hospital on Monday the 8th, I mean the 7th?
On Monday the 7th, yes. Yeah, so my understanding was the doctor that we were seeing or that he was seeing had some really strong beliefs that the cancer that he had was not causing the breathing obstructions, that it very likely could be pneumonia. And he told us, he said, if it's the cancer, that's the worst. But if it's pneumonia, like I think it is, I think we've got some treatment options.
So what was there hope on June the 7th?
Absolutely. When he told me that, I mean, first of all, when he said he had to go into hospital, it scared me. You know, obviously it scares you when a doctor tells you immediately have to check in. But yes, him explaining that he was optimistic that it was going to be pneumonia, and that there would be a breathing treatment to help it. I felt pretty good.
Now, in evidence, and I'm not going to read it again, but did you and your brother send out text messages to family members, giving them an update?
We did.
And that was on the 7th?
That was on the 7th.
And in the update, did you explain the doctor believed it was pneumonia?
Yes, I gave a basic summary of what I was told by the doctor, what I believed it to be. I think Randy and I had a few minutes to talk, and he typed up another email just to make sure that everybody was in the loop.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, not an email, a text message.
Text message.
I'm sorry.
Okay. And did the diagnosis and the prognosis subsequently change on
well,
your death?
It did. It did.
When was that?
Well, so on Tuesday afternoon, we're back out at Alameda. I mean, I'm sorry, we're back at Moselle. And, you know, we still hadn't heard much. I mean, all this other stuff going on, as you can imagine, it's just so much going on. Randy called me and told me they had done everything that they could do and that he would be coming home in an ambulance. Under hospice care.
Okay. And did he die on June the 10th?
He died, I think, 2 days later.
There's... Take your time.
That's all right. That's all right.
Going back to taking your dad to the doctor and then checking in the hospital, there's some vehicles being switched around a little bit, and we'll get to that. But can you explain to the jury how all that transportation went to get to your dad to the hospital? Well, doctor,
you're talking about on that Monday for me to get him.
June the 7th.
It's a little bit complicated, but I'll do my best to explain it. So, Randy, on Monday morning, Dad had been in the hospital Sunday, got out Sunday, knew that he needed to be seen by his regular doctor, but did not have an appointment. And so, Randy was doing everything he could to get him in as early as he could on that Monday, and just asked me, he says, if I get the appointment, can you take him? And I said, absolutely, I'd be delighted to. A little while later, an hour or two, I don't know. It was still that morning. Randy calls me and says, okay, they have an opening for him, but he has to get there right away. So Hampton is, an hour and a half from Savannah, hour and a half. He said, you don't have time to drive to Hampton to get him. I will meet you in Ridgeland about halfway, which is not far from my house. And then you just take him, and I'll go back. He had some time sensitive things to work on. So we met at Palmetto Co-op in Ridgeland. I got in my mom's car with my dad. Randy got in my truck and drove it back to Alameda where Randy had come to pick up my dad. So Randy's truck's back at mom and dad's house. So I drive dad to Savannah in my mom's car, go through what we just talked about, the doctor's appointment, getting checked in. And back then COVID was still going on and there were several restrictions. They wouldn't let me go back with my dad at that time. So I was going to be driving home and now I'm stuck in my mom's car. So I know Paul was working and it was around five or so. And that's when we closed. I called Paul and said, Paul, listen, I need you to, if you would, drive my mom's car back to Alameda, pick up my truck and bring it to work the next morning. And then just leave your, he was driving a farm truck that day. I said, leave it and I'll drive it and we'll just swap back the next morning. And so that's how our cars got swapped.
All right. So when you got back on the evening of the 7th, did you see Paul?
I did.
And where did you see him?
At my house.
And he got into your mom's
car
and drove,
right. And drove it to Alameda and then got in my truck and drove it to Moselle.
Okay. And you said the farm truck was at your house. Do you remember where Paul's truck was?
Paul's normal truck was in the shop being worked on.
Was that Jimmy Butler's?
It was a shop in Varnville, Jimmy Butler's, yes, okay. Sir.
Now, when you last saw Paul, was he just as normal as you see him every day?
Oh, absolutely. He was playing with my kids in the yard, waiting on me to get there. In fact, that particular day, he was pretty dirty. So whatever he had been doing back at work had him pretty dirty, but he was playing with the kids in the yard, being Paul.
Is that the last time you saw him?
That is the last time I saw him.
When did you learn that, and how did you learn that Maggie and Paul were murdered on the night of June the 7th?
Well, Alec called me, and Liz and I, we have three young kids, younger kids. I mean, our youngest is 8 now, so it would have been 6 at the time, and so we don't have a lot of free time to ourselves, but that night we were watching television,
Well, let me back up. Had Alec called you earlier in the night when he was on his way to
his mom's? Yes, sir.
And that we got phone records of that. What do you recall of that conversation?
He called, just checking on me. Just said, I saw the news about Dad. Things look good, It was a brief conversation, and I hate to say it, but I kind of said, listen, I finally have a few minutes. Can we talk tomorrow? We're watching a movie.
And what was his demeanor when you spoke with him on the evening of the 7th?
Same as always, just normal.
And then later on that night, you got another phone call from him?
And I got when you asked the question, how did I learn? Yes, Alec called me and just absolutely hysterical. As soon as I heard his voice, I knew something bad was going on, didn't know what. I'm in my pajamas. He said, something bad is really happening. And I don't know what his exact words, but I think he said, Maggie and Paul have been hurt really badly. Please get here as fast as you can. And, I drop what I'm doing and I go get dressed and I'm hurrying. I'm, just so many things are going through your mind. You don't know what to do. So I get dressed and I run outside and realize I don't have a car. I've Paul's car is out there, and it is a hunk of junk. And I mean,
this was the farm truck.
This was the farm truck, and so I knew I couldn't take my wife's car because she was taking the kids to school. And at this point, I knew something bad. I just didn't know how bad it was.
And so, did you then get in the farm truck and head to Moselle?
I did.
And what happened along the way?
Well, so along the way, I'd spoken to Randy. He asked me to try to get in touch with a close family friend and one of their law partners, Danny Henderson. I was just constantly trying to call him. I'm driving fast. I'm trying to get to Moselle. And once I got Danny and told him that he needed to get up there. You know, I had a few minutes to myself, and I was crying. And somebody called me shortly after that. I don't know who it was. I can't remember. But I remember it was either Alec or Randy, I believe. And they said the sheets were being pulled over them.
Did the farm truck break down?
It did.
How'd you end up getting to Moselle?
Well, so let me back up and tell you. So the route that from my house down in Okotie, Beaufort, takes me to Coosahatchee, and I get on 95 to go to Yemassee and getting off and coming up that way. Well, another close family friend, his name is Greg Alexander. He is the chief of police in Yemassee. I reach out to him, and I just say, Greg, I gave him said something bad had happened. Or again, I don't know when I was told about the sheets, but I told him, I said, listen, something bad's happened. We got to get up there. When I get to Yemassee, can you please help make sure I get to Moselle? Because this truck's sputtering, and I knew it wasn't good. And he met me at Yemassee, and he fell in behind me, and we started driving until he finally passed me in Varnville. Well, go ahead.
And did he end up driving you the rest of the way?
Well, he did. So he passed me shortly before Varnville. He took a ride on 63, and he was a little ways ahead of me when the truck quit on me. I called him and said, Greg, I said, come back and get me. The truck has broken down. And, of course, he picked me up and took me straight on to Moselle.
Were there any guns in the farm truck that Paul had left when you got in it?
I have no idea. It was dark when I got in it. I, as y'all can imagine, I was frantic. I jumped in it, and I took off.
Did you ever see any guns in it?
That night, never. I mean, I didn't look. I mean, it just right. I wasn't looking in the backseat. I wasn't worried about anything except getting to Moselle.
Okay. Do you remember about the time you got to Moselle? What time was it, roughly? Or better yet, who was there when you got there?
Well, well before I got to Moselle, or we got to Moselle, you could see the lights flashing. It was just there were tons of people. It mostly what I would describe is first responders of some sort.
And when you pulled up, where did you go?
So we came in the main gate and came around, and they had created a small crime scene. And when we pulled up, I saw Alec, and I think before Greg even stopped the car, I jumped out and ran to him.
And what was his condition, Alex?
Oh, he was just broken. I mean, distraught. I mean, everybody was. There were a few other people there, but he just, all we did is hugged and cried. I mean, I don't even know that we talked.
How long did you stay down adjacent to the crime scene, do you recall?
Quite some time. I have to assume that I probably was there at the 11 o'clock-ish. I don't know what time I got there, but I don't think we went back up to the house, until well after midnight, maybe 2, 3.
And when you went to the house, do you recall if any SLED agents came up there?
Well, I did not see any. I heard some testimony, some came and got some clothes, but I did not see any SLED agents at the house. The last officer that I remember seeing that night, or officers, were the ones that told us that we needed to leave that area, that they were going to be doing stuff with the bodies, and that we needed to go to the house.
Right. When you went into the house, were there other people in there when you got in?
There were. You know, most people that I knew, some of Alec's partners, Randy's partners, family members, Lynn.
Was there food out or had food? What was it? Had anything?
I didn't see any food, but I saw pots and pans, and I saw folks that were cleaning up. They were removing pots and pans, but, I never opened it and looked in it, so I presumed that it was food. They cleaned dishes. They put the pots and pans away or in the refrigerator.
Was a TV on in the house? Do you Do you remember?
Based on what I know, I would say it is, but I can't tell you 100% that it was on, but I'd be willing to bet it was.
What do you mean when you say based on what you know?
Well, I don't think I'd ever been in that house without the TV being on if Alec and Maggie were there.
After, did you ultimately go to Almeda that evening with Alec, Buster, and his girlfriend, Brooklyn?
We did.
Do you remember what Alec was wearing when he went to Almeda?
Not precise. I can't, he was wearing shorts and a T-shirt. I can't tell you details, but it was shorts and a T-shirt, you know, like relaxed shorts.
Do you know whether he had had a shower or not?
It appeared he had. Okay. I mean, his hair was not. I didn't see him in the shower, but I can tell you I think he had a shower.
I understand. So then let's move forward to the morning of the June 8th. I guess, did you get any sleep the night of June the 7th?
Very little. I don't know that I fell asleep. I've certainly laid in the bed. It's just, as you can imagine, just the thoughts and things. I don't know if I slept. When I got up and started moving the next day, I certainly didn't feel like I'd slept.
What did you do the next day when you got up?
You talking about precisely or generally?
Just generally.
I got up and Alec was up. I don't think Buster and Buckman were. I told Alec that I was going over to Greenfield. My farm that I told you all about is 2 or 3 miles away, so it's very close. And I have all, you know, plenty of clothes over there. So I told him I was going over there to shower and put on fresh clothes and that I would meet him at Moselle.
And did you go to Moselle?
I did, after I left Greenfield. Yes, sir.
And do you remember who was there when you got to Moselle?
I was the first one there.
And what did you do?
I just went to stay there until I knew Buster, Brooklyn, and Alec were coming. I suspected that other family members and partners, I knew others were coming, so I just kind of sat there in disbelief still. It's just, you know, moments of just...
Was the door to the house unlocked? Do you remember?
You know, that's a good question. I thought about it. I don't remember. Right. It either was unlocked or I had the code, because there's a keypad on a side door, but I can't tell you which door I went in. I don't know.
Did you eventually go down to the kennels?
I did. Once everyone got there, there was a fair amount of activity in the house with family and law partners, Alec's law partners, Randy's law partners. I just felt like I needed to go down. I needed to see for myself what had gone on and just kind of take it in. I mean, maybe for some type of understanding.
How long did you stay down there at the kennels?
Well, I don't know. But I will say this, before I went, I was unsure whether I was allowed to go because I knew it was a crime scene. And so I reached out to a friend of mine in law enforcement and said, listen, I don't know who's handling the crime scene. I don't know whatever. He said, well, I'll find out and make sure that it's clear for you to go. And he said, don't go until I tell you. And he called me back a few minutes later and said he had spoken to, I believe it was Captain Ryan Neal, and had given the okay that everything was released and it was okay to go there.
And was it cleaned up?
No, Jim, it was not cleaned up.
Okay. Were there skull fragments?
Yeah, so, excuse me, this is going to be really difficult. So I could easily see where Maggie had been. You know, I saw the night before where the sheets were, but and somebody had told me that who was who, and so I could see where Maggie had been, and it was grass, and, you know, they had covered it up with dirt, so there really was nothing to see where Maggie was. I walked over to the feed room, and y'all have heard the descriptions. Y'all saw it. I've never seen pictures, and I've told them before coming to this court that I was not going to see pictures. But y'all can imagine what I experienced. It had not been cleaned up. I saw blood. I saw brains. I saw pieces of skull. And when I say brains, it could just be tissue. I don't know what I was seeing. It was terrible. And for some reason, I thought it was my something that I needed to do for Paul to clean it up. I felt like it was the right thing to do. I felt like I owed him, and I started cleaning. And I can promise you, no mother or father or aunt or uncle should ever have to see and do what I did that day. I don't know. I'm not blaming anybody, but it's just, I was just overwhelmed. I did everything I could, and I would have moments where I would stop crying for a moment, and just in disbelief. At one point, I called my brother Randy, and told him what I was doing, trying to describe what I was doing, and he immediately told me to stop doing it. It was not good for me. It was not healthy for me to be there, and I couldn't stop. I had to do it for Paul. That's just what I had to do. And I don't know, it's probably 15, 20 minutes later. Mark Ball shows up. Y'all heard Mark Ball testify. And he came and hugged me and told me it was okay to leave. Okay to leave what was left of Paul. They would clean it up. It's the hardest thing I've ever been through in my life.
Yes, sir. What'd you do next?
You know, Mark basically got me. I'm sure I was just a basket case, but he got me back to the house and, you know, got me back around family and, you know, just got back to, you know, the support of others that were there. And you know, there were a lot of people at the house at that point.
Do you remember when you got back to the house, at some point in time, people raising questions or bringing up the fact that Maggie's phone had not been located?
Yeah, so that was, you know, particular the lawyers, they were all, you know, being lawyers, they were, you know, questioning things amongst themselves and, you know, how could this happen, trying to figure things out. But it was brought to my attention that Maggie's phone was not there and that law enforcement had not found it. And I can't say that, in fact, I can probably say that I didn't think of it because I'm not a big phone user or a big app user or whatnot, but somebody brought to my attention and says, listen, if Buster or Alec, if they have an app on their phone, like find my phone or find my friends or an app like that, they said you very likely can find out where the phone is if the battery's not dead. And so I went to Buster and sure enough, I said, Buster, do you have this one of these apps like they're talking about? And he said, yeah, sure I do. I said, well, open it up. He opened it up and he handed me the phone and I see Maggie's name and I press it where, you know, to activate it and it pings Maggie's phone just out front of the property. And I was like, I hate to say it, but I said, holy shit, there it is. And I said, Buster, I'm taking your phone. I'm going to go back down to the shed and show it to law enforcement.
And who did you approach first about the phone?
Well, I don't know who it was. Presumably it was SLED agents, because keep in mind, I didn't know any of these guys with SLED. I mean, there were a couple of faces that I'd seen before, but I don't know these guys. I've come to know him, but I don't know him or didn't know him then. So I went up to the two sled agents and said, presumably sled agents, and said, hey, I've got Buster's phone here, and it's got an app on it that can find the phone, and it's showing Maggie's phone's right out here. Let's go get it. And he said, no need. We have technology coming later today that we should be able to find it. And it blew me away that I'm sitting here showing them where Maggie's phone is, but they won't take the time to walk with me or take this phone itself. I mean, I'd give them the phone to go find it. So I walk over. I knew Duffy Stone. He was the solicitor. I knew one of his investigators. I walked over to them, said the exact same thing, and they immediately said, absolutely, let's go find this thing before the battery goes dead.
And what happened?
That we did that. We started walking down the back entrance, or the kennel entrance, if you will. And as we were, and at that time, the agent was holding the phone. You know, I'm looking at it with him. And when it pings, it creates a dot or a location. And that dot jumped from right at the end of that road down the road, I don't know, maybe a half a mile, three quarters of a mile. And so we walked back, got into a car, and drove down to where it was showing the phone.
And was the phone?
And I rode with those agents, the solicitor's office agents.
Was the phone ultimately located on the side of the road?
Absolutely, we found it in a matter of minutes.
Okay. Do you remember how it was collected? I mean, were you present when it was collected?
I was. So I was on. There's a cow pasture on one side, and it's wooded on the other side. And I was on the side that the cow pasture's on, if you will. And I heard him say, I got it. And so, you know, of course, I walked back beside his car, and I'm good ways from it, but I see him over there. And I think he took either some ribbon or some flagging or flagging tape and marked the phone. And I don't think he touched it. I think he left it right where it was. Called SLED, and maybe at that time, maybe they had been communicating, but SLED had blocked off the road at this point, and one of the agents came up and picked the phone up. Okay. And I don't know which agent. Again, I didn't know him.
Did any law enforcement officer ask you if you knew the password?
Yes. Yeah, so once they, and I'll say this, so they did take pictures of it while it was on the ground before they touched it. They picked it up. I think they had gloves on. They picked it up, brought it back to the trunk of the car, and opened it up in power zone. And they then asked, you know, what's the password? And of course, I didn't know it.
Did you find out the password?
I did. I called Alec, and he gave me the password. I repeated it to the agent. They put the password in and said, it's open.
So Alec provided you the password that you passed to the agents, and it opened the phone?
Yes, sir. That's correct.
That wraps up segment number 4 in our continuing coverage of the trial of Alec Murdaugh. There is more to come. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
Hey everyone, this is Carrie Champion, the host of Naked Sports.
When you sit behind the wheel of the all-new 2025 Nissan Armada Pro 4X, you'll feel like the entire world is your playground, and you'd be right, because this unshakable fortress of a vehicle is built to take you on your next adventure. With a twin-turbo V6 engine, the all-new Armada is powerful enough to take you anywhere. With its 8,500 pounds of towing capacity, it will let you bring all your toys along, and with seating for 8, your whole crew can join you. Nissan created a truly capable vehicle in the all-new Armada. In fact, it's the first Armada to earn the Pro 4X badge, which Nissan reserves for its most adventure-ready vehicles. The Armada is a big SUV designed and built for big adventures and must be experienced to be appreciated. Drive the all-new 2025 Nissan Armada today. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. Intelligent four-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, There are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Hey everyone, this is Carrie Champion, the host of Naked Sports.
When you sit behind the wheel of the all-new 2025 Nissan Armada Pro 4X, you'll feel like the entire world is your playground, and you'd be right. Because this unshakable fortress of a vehicle is built to take you on your next adventure. With a twin-turbo V6 engine, the all-new Armada is powerful enough to take you anywhere. With its 8,500 pounds of towing capacity, it will let you bring all your toys along. And with seating for eight, your whole crew can join you. Nissan created a truly capable vehicle in the all-new Armada. In fact, it's the first Armada to earn the Pro 4X badge, which Nissan reserves for its most adventure-ready vehicles. The Armada is a big SUV designed and built for big adventures and must be experienced to be appreciated. Drive the all-new 2025 Nissan Armada today. Learn more at nissanusa.com. Intelligent four-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
Hey everyone, this is Carrie Champion, the host of Naked Sports.
When you sit behind the wheel of the all-new 2025 Nissan Armada Pro 4X, you'll feel like the entire world is your playground, and you'd be right. Because this unshakable fortress of a vehicle is built to take you on your next adventure. With a twin-turbo V6 engine, the all-new Armada is powerful enough to take you anywhere. With its 8,500 pounds of towing capacity, it will let you bring all your toys along. And with seating for eight, your whole crew can join you. Nissan created a truly capable vehicle in the all-new Armada. In fact, it's the first Armada to earn the Pro 4X badge, which Nissan reserves for its most adventure-ready vehicles. The Armada is a big SUV designed and built for big adventures and must be experienced to be appreciated. Drive the all-new 2025 Nissan Armada today. Learn more at nissanusa.com. Intelligent four-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply. You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. With school out, summer is the perfect time to teach our kids real-world money skills they'll use forever. Greenlight is a debit card and the number one family finance and safety app used by millions of families, helping kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. Parents can send their kids money and track their spending and saving, while kids build money confidence and skills in fun ways. Start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/iHeart. That's greenlight.com/iHeart.
Does Friendly have a taste? If it does, it's probably like Hello's peppermint-flavored anti-plaque and whitening toothpaste. Brush away plaque, show tartar who's boss, and remove surface stains to naturally whiten. Hello's thoughtful and flavor-forward products make brushing your teeth feel like a confetti-filled bathroom dance party. So say hello to Hello with the always cruelty-free, never tested on animals toothpaste that's made to spread smiles. Visit HelloProducts.com and let Hello add some everyday yay into your life.